Good morning, everyone. So glad to be with you this morning. I think this is my third time to be here at Edgewood, and you're the same kind, loving, sweet people I remembered from all those times before, so good job in keeping that spirit here. You know, when I got up this morning and I started, when I left my house and drove up here, I live in Peachtree Corners, all of a sudden it's like the color is out. It seemed like, I don't know if I've been blind or not, but it's like it's been so dull this fall, and all of a sudden there's this beautiful color, and my street was covered with all these beautiful leaves, and then as I was driving down Memorial Drive, there was this wonderful brush of color all over the trees, and it's like, it's fall, y'all. And I love, this is my favorite time of year, and I have missed that color, wondering if it was even going to show up. So God's paintbrush has been out this morning. Let's just give thanks for that in this season of Thanksgiving. And thank you for letting me be part of your responsible series. Boy, we need some responsibility in this world, don't we? We need responsible leaders, we need responsible co-workers, we need responsible family members and neighbors, and, you know, those people need to be responsible. But, you know, before we can point the finger, we better turn it around and point it here and ask the question, am I living a responsible life as God would have me to live with what God has given me? And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. So when you hear the story, now first of all, let me tell you that I studied this from the NRSV translation, and there's some different wording in there, so I'm going to be referring to that. Instead of the three bags of gold, that translation calls them talents. So we'll interchange the same meaning. So this parable about talents, when you hear that and the three people receiving different amounts, did it just take you back to your childhood where there might have been some sibling rivalry, where your mom, you thought your mom gave your brother a bigger piece of cake, or your sister got more gifts or better gifts than you, or there was a fight over who got to ride in the front seat of the car? You know how that goes. There just seems to be something built into human beings that sizes up and evaluates things like that, and then decides our worth based on it. So that's something we've got to overcome there. So this parable seems kind of harsh, doesn't it? It's like, ooh, when you read some of it. After all, the poor guy with the one talent didn't lose it. He gave it back to the master. So this requires thinking about what the story is teaching us. So let's look at, what is a parable? A parable is a story with a truth or lesson inside the story. And what we have to do is look for the lesson in the story. And also, it's good to look at what character you identify most with in the story. That will tell you something. So this is a story about talents, or bags of gold. The talent was originally a measure of weight. Later, the word began to be equated with a fixed amount of silver or gold, roughly equivalent to about $1,000. So it was a lot of money. So nowadays, we might commonly say that people are gifted with talents or gifts of maybe business acumen, sports, leadership, all kinds of ways you can be gifted with talents. That's how we speak of it today. So the parable is clearly teaching we don't all have the same talents or gifts. Our talents differ. Every person has gifts to be used. Nobody doesn't have any. They all have some. But none is above the other. All persons are accountable to God in how we use our gifts. So in the parable, there is the giving of the talent and a period of time to go and do something with it, invest it, increase it. And every person has those gifts to be used. But then there comes the accounting, the day of accounting to the master. So all of those were equal. So now let's recognize that this is a parable about the kingdom of God and not really about money. Let's transfer that idea there. If we can take our focus off money for a moment, and let's think about other ways we may have squandered our talents that are not of monetary value. I might ask, how have I invested or cultivated what God has given me to do to increase the kingdom? The kingdom of God is what God has provided all of us. So the story's main point is that God expects the increase of what we have been given. Now, here's a very important point. If you don't hear anything else, hear this. It's not about the amount you were given. It's what you do with what you've been given. So stop thinking of, oh, he got five, he got two, I got one. So we must be willing. What this means is we must be willing to take some risk, not be content with the way things are, not just sit on our talent or our bags of gold. This made me think of that well-known poem by Robert Frost, and the last line goes like this. Two roads converged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference. So the poem gets the reader to see themselves coming to a fork in the road, and there's two ways to go. There's a decision. One looks well-traveled, and you might expect that would be the easier way because others have gone down it. And the other one looks less traveled by and therefore causing the decision to take the risk to go that way. But we should notice that the title of the poem is not The Road Less Traveled. The title of that poem is The Road Not Taken. So there's the what if. Well, what if I had gone that way? What would have happened? What if I go this way? And that's life. We're always brought up to that fork in the road where there's the decisions. There are times when we're faced with what to do with our lives and the gifts we've been given. And that requires some decision and risk. But in the end, what's important is to go. We must walk forth and not just stare at the fork of the road and give up and go home. It's important to note that God treats the man with the five talents the same as the one with the two. They both hear the same words. Well done, good and trustworthy servant. You've been trustworthy with a few things, and I'll put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. So each man has his gift and his place in the kingdom. There need not be any envy or pride or competition. We're all servants and stewards of God's kingdom, and God's love and joy are given equally to all. Well, you're saying, well, what about the guy with the one talent? This is the difficult part of that story. The man with the one talent was scolded by the master. So first we have to look back and see what did he say? What did he say when he was given his accounting? He says, Master, I knew that you are a harsh man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you did not scatter seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, have what is yours. It sounds like it was maybe okay, but not when you understand the meaning of the story. The statement seems to come from a really poor image of his master. He was certainly critical. You're a harsh man. You don't deal fairly with people. And he seemed to lack faith in life and in his master, because what did he say? I was afraid. Now, what does fear do to relationships and to taking risk in life in general? It shuts it down, doesn't it? The poet Charlotte Bronte said, better to try all things and find all empty than to try nothing and leave your life a blank. So failure is not the worst thing that can ever happen to you. That really is not, that's a lie that we're told. So now let's transfer the right characters to the story. The master in the story, of course, is representing God. And the one with the one talent man in the story, think about that being yourself. Is your image of God like his? Do you think that God is harsh and not fair? Do you fear what God will do to you? Be honest about that. That's a challenge I think a lot of us have. And let me give you another image, another way of thinking about this. Think of that one talent man as a note on a piano. If that one note is missing, the music will be lacking something vital. Now, anybody that knows music knows that's true. You will not hear the same thing. Something will be off. It'll be missing. So it's easy to think that that one little note won't matter. It won't make any difference to the music because we're not important enough. Not so. So now, not everybody can be George Washington or Martin Luther King Jr. or Bill Gates. That one talent man, the one who just got the one, can speak, he can work, he can play, pray, he can do what he can in his small part of the world. And if he had done so, he would have heard the same words the other two got. Well done, my good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of your master. So now let's look at how burying the talent in the ground might have played out in history. I'm going to start with some more dramatic, well-known examples. So what if the Apostle Paul, Saul as he was known, had ignored that encounter with Jesus on the road to Damascus and failed to live out the calling he had to bring the gospel to the Gentiles? Well, we would not have most of the New Testament, and we might be sitting in a synagogue today instead of a church. What if Johann Gutenberg had ignored his inventor's mind and pursued a happy-go-lucky life instead of inventing the printing press? That invention literally changed the world and was responsible for the spread of the gospel and the putting the Bible in the hands of the common person. Now, here's a story about a woman you've never heard of. Her name is Liu Zhaoxing, and she and her husband rescued 30 abandoned babies in China despite living in relative poverty themselves. So here's her story. While making a living recycling rubbish, Liu and her husband, Li Zhen, often came across tiny babies in their locality in the eastern province of China. The sight of abandoned babies was so common that the people would often ignore them, passing them by and choosing to remain oblivious to their plight. So Liu, however, was one person who did not ignore that. She would take the babies to her humble home and nurse them back to health until they regained their strength and grew into strong, happy children. She says, "The whole thing started when I found that first baby, a little girl, back in 1972. She was just lying amongst the junk on the street, abandoned. She would have died had we not rescued and taken her in. Watching her grow and become stronger gave us such happiness that I realized I had a real love of caring for children. She found her one talent. I realized if we had strength enough to collect garbage, how could we not recycle something as important as human lives?" And there was her ministry. Dr. Jim Withers used to dress like a homeless person on purpose. Two or three nights a week, he would walk the dark streets of Pittsburgh searching for homeless people in need of medical care. So he used his talent to give free health care to people. Richard Joyner's nonprofit Kanto Family Life Center in Kanto, North Carolina, grows food, which feeds nearby residents for free and helps students raise scholarship money. This Family Life Center, their mission is to improve the health of the youth and community by increasing access to healthy foods, increasing physical activities, and providing access to health services. The goal is to change the poverty cycle in families through improving the resources available to them. So he discovers, I can grow food, and he can do something with that that benefits the community. Knowing more than 11 million senior citizens live alone in the United States, Inez Russell started Friends for Life. This organization goes into senior adults' homes who need a helping hand. And since 1986, they've helped over 22,000 people navigate a variety of difficulties. People who can't get to the grocery store, they might need a ride to their doctor. They might need something done in their house. You don't need a PhD, you don't need a lot of money or a business license to just take what you can do and go out there and help people. So all these acts of kindness are relatively obscure, probably mostly unknown. Why do they do it? Well, I can't testify to the faith of all these people, but it seems to me like it is the image of God that is planted within all of us that somehow is activated when you become in touch with how God is at work within you and what God has given you, and when you see that need and you respond to it. You see, all of us matter. We matter to God, and we matter to as a part of this world that God has created. And if we're not playing our note, then something's going to be missing in the concert of life. If we're burying our talents and letting them lie dormant, we're denying the gifts of God who intended you and I to use them. Remember, it's not how much it is, it's just what you do with it. It's not about how big or famous or important any of us are. It's what we do with who God has created us to be. We're all equal in God's sight. So here's what I want to leave you with today. If you have buried your treasure, go out today and dig it up and use it.